You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, brand builders. Before we start this week's show, just a quick reminder about this fall's Social Brand Forum in Iowa City, Iowa on October 15th and 16th. You can learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com. Remember, when you register on or before July 31st, you guarantee that you get the best rate. Listeners to this podcast can get an even better rate by using promo code ONBRAND. Learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Tim Washer. Tim has performed at events featuring Pixar CEO John Lasseter, Emmy winner Tony Hale of Veep and Arrested Development, and Nobel Peace Prize winner Desmond Tutu. Tim studied improv under Amy Poehler and later wrote for her on Saturday Night Live Weekend Update. He studied comedy writing under Tom Purcell, head writer for The Colbert Report. TV comedy appearances include HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, The Onion Sports Network, Conan O'Brien, and a T-Mobile commercial with Catherine Zeta-Jones. Corporate events include IBM, Cisco, Deloitte, CDC, Google, and the White House. Conferences include South by Southwest, the Wall Street Journal CMO Conference, and Content Marketing World Sydney. Tim's work has been featured in Ad Age, Adweek, Fast Company, Forbes, Entrepreneur, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, and now the On Brand Podcast. Tim, welcome.
Nick, thanks for having me.
So, in all of that, what did I miss?
Well, actually, about half of that wasn't true. So,
just straight up lies, then.
Yeah, straight up lies. So we've covered more. We've overcovered.
How do you recover then?
No, we can't. There's no recovering. It's in a spiral of decline right now. I can feel that happening.
Okay. So we're starting off shaky here. That is unfortunate. So for those that don't know, Tim, how do you spend your days?
I work at Cisco as a video producer, a writer and a producer during the day. And then they have been kind enough. It has been kind enough to let me do comedy on the side, which is fun. And so that's a mix of speaking at content marketing conferences or doing a commercial or a late night show in New York. Little odd jobs in comedy like that. But the bulk of it is doing producing videos for the social endeavor at Cisco.
The social endeavor at Cisco, and you've been a part of some pretty big social endeavors at Cisco, I believe. For those that don't know, involved giving a server as a Valentine's gift.
That's probably one of my all time favorites. That's a fun one, and it's funny. We did that like 7 years ago, and you'll still see that pop up on a blog post every now and then, or at a conference or something. And what's amazing about that is like we did that fairly inexpensively, and I'm always involved in this discussion about, well, should we be doing comedy or not? You know, should a brand be doing comedy or not? When you do it well, and it still has a shelf life of 7 years. Think about all the talking head videos that are produced in the corporate world that three people see. And it's just, I just don't get why more people don't give this a shot. Comedy, that is.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would think, you are a pretty interesting anomaly in terms of, are there other, individuals with a comedic background embedded in organizations, especially a big B2B enterprise like Cisco?
Yeah, that while that is the case, I mean, definitely this role is an anomaly for sure. But at the same time, you look at there are plenty of people who are like me who can write comedy and who can improvise and who can sit down with a marketing person and say, okay, this is what we need to get done, and let them go out and do something. Like another guy I studied at UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade, and the guy who did the Shave Club. What am I thinking of? You know,
the Dollar Shave Club.
Thank you. He's another UCB guy. He's just an improviser who can write. And most of the people I've improvised with are really bright people and are excellent writers as well. And while they don't necessarily work in a marketing job for a large corporation, it wouldn't take too much to kind of expand for marketers to expand the virtual team and go bring in improvisers to experiment with some projects.
So what do you think, with as easy as that is, and I know you and I have talked that before, about that before too. I mean, there's, you know, big sources like like UCB, like Second City, but it's also not hard to connect with improvisers in communities of all kinds of size. I mean, even here in Iowa, where I'm where I am located, it's not hard. And yet, why is that such a big hurdle?
I think because people still think, I think there's just this barrier that people believe it can't be done. It can't. How in the world am I going to go out and find a comedy writer to do what we need to do? It's either going to. I believe there's this belief that it's going to cost too much because I have to go with a big Madison Avenue agency, which is not the case. You can work with your agency on record and see what they can come up with. But I think a lot of it is, I've talked to a lot of people who've told me, yeah, we've tried comedy once, and you just kind of, okay, and how'd that go? You know, there's a follow-up. And of course, it's like, well, we have this guy, Dave, in accounting, who's, you know, pretty funny at parties. That's not what you need. You know, that's you didn't really try comedy. You really have to give it. You need to get people who know what they're doing, who know how to write and know how to edit comedy. You can't. So many times I've been in a conversation and we'll pitch a script and we'll have a really good script, and then everybody's on board with it and they're like, "Oh, let's go." You know what? We have an approved vendor here that does all of our town halls, films all of our town halls for us, and they're really, really good. You know, they have those little mics that clip on, clip on the shirts. And I'm like, that's, you know what? That's wonderful. That's really good. But they, unless they have a lot of experience with comedic timing and how to shoot it and frame the shots, just so you give the right amount of context, but not too much, all these things, it's not going to work out for you. So I think part of the problem is a lot of people have tried it and they didn't have the tools they needed and it hasn't gone well. And then I think you also have a large group that just thinks comedy is what they've seen at a stand-up comedy club once, you know, or it's Carrot Top or something that's just about insults and something, you know, profane, which it's not at all. It's not at all. And anybody who's been watching The Daily Show or Colbert or some of these shows, they definitely have made the point that, hey, you can really gain an audience's attention and get an information, get a point across and an argument across in a much powerful, much, much more powerful way if you make it funny. So I think, I don't know.
Yeah, it was going to be Dave in accounting's big break, though.
This could have been.
Yeah, that was where it was really going to turn for him.
Now, do you introduce yourself at parties as Nick Westergaard of The Daily Show? Because of your episode on there?
Oh, you know, I do not, you know, but okay. It's like the Nick Westergaard effect, though, because Jason Jones left and the whole thing's just coming apart. It was a mistake. It was for them to come to Iowa.
After your appearance, I didn't realize that. And now Stewart's leaving. And this is directly tied to your being featured on there?
I haven't worked that into my bio yet because I'm still spinning.
Oh, my God.
I feel like there's a way to make that. To make that go, to be the guy who successfully unwired the late night hosting lineup, it was all here.
This is where it happened. It came from Iowa. How about that?
You know what's interesting? The funny story about that that little Daily Show piece was that they had something a scenario that they wanted to set up, and they were looking for people to be in it. And I was actually charged with finding local people to be in it, and so many. Not unlike, you know, what you're talking about of kind of some of those stereotypes about comedy, people were afraid. They were afraid that, like you said, the local comedian at the Chortle Hut, who just makes fun of the audience, that they were going to be the punchline instead of being a part of it. So,
we did, you know, and look, that's one thing. The Daily Show, while it definitely made the point that comedy can be intelligent and clever. And of course that's people have known that forever. It's just they've expanded the audience that's aware of that. I would say I'd definitely give Stewart credit for that, John Stewart. So but at the same time, they have also the correspondence pieces, the field pieces they do. A lot of times they're out there and they're making the person they're interviewing look like a knucklehead. So they've made some of this challenging. And so we've started on our Voice of the Customer team at work. We started this series a while back where we wanted to interview CIOs or technology executives. And we knew we'd be up against that that hurdle, meaning that people who've seen The Daily Show will think, okay, they hear comedy and they hear interview and they think you're going to make them look like a jackass. But fortunately, we've been able to get past that, and we've gotten a series started. And people have been willing and quite playful and very game for it. CIOs. There are all these kind of perceptions you have to work through with comedy, and it is. It can be a tough sell at first, but of course, if you get a couple of successes under your belt, or if you've seen some successes in the business that you can share, it's a lot easier, I think, to get people to say, hey, I want to do something like that.
Well, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up the Voice of the Customer pieces. Now, these are the ones, because I believe I've seen at least part of this series with you as a waiter. Is that the one? Are those the ones I'm thinking of?
That's right. Yeah, that was the first one we did. It was called Fast Innovation and the Slow Waiter. Yes.
Yeah. And I'll be sure to embed those in the post here for the show. But it's a really interesting. I mean, because honestly, what you're left with is what one would normally accomplish via a customer testimonial, which is one of the most powerful ways to communicate your brand's benefits. But it's exactly what you said earlier about all the talking head videos. I mean, testimonials have almost been ruined by those.
They have. And geez, those talking head videos are just so painful. They're so painful. And that's exactly what we were starting off to do is like, okay, how do we flip that on its head? How do we still get the same information across but make it interesting and make it something that the viewer is going to appreciate? And the thing about the slow waiter thing came about just because we were at we had this CIO conference where we have some of our larger customers there, and so a bunch of CIOs gathered in one spot, and we thought, well, we should take advantage of all these people being here. And we were looking around at the hotel to get a spot. You know, I said, look, we cannot do these interviews it's funny. I said, we can't do this we have to be somewhere other than a conference room, because once you're in a conference room, you know, it's amazing how the environment has such a strong influence over the conversation. You know,
but Tim, then it wouldn't have an abstract painting and a plant.
That's a valid point.
And
that's a valid point.
I think have to be there.
And the beige wall. Yes, that's what I think. Those are the brand guidelines that you need. It's funny. The team came back and said, "Oh yeah, okay. Well, that's fine. We won't do a conference room, but you could do the interviews. We'll get a guest room." And I'm thinking, okay, that's not going to be awkward at all. Me sitting on the lounge or the king size bed, with the CIO. One of us in a bathrobe, maybe, I don't know. But they, what happened is that they came back. The events team was amazing. They came back. There's this woman, Steph McCann, who works there, works on the team, and she says, "Hey, we can get you. There's a high-end steakhouse that's only open for dinner, so you can have it up until 4:30." And we thought, okay, great. Well, we'll do the scenario where, you know, there'll be a waiter in there who's kind of an SNL kind of goofy character and just wants to talk too much, and just make it fun that way. He's interrupting people's dinner. So it kind of opens up with this hook. I think that's what people should do more, is try to find a way. How can we find a fun way to get into the story that might be that's going to be a surprise? And just maybe there'll be some moments of surprise and joy for the audience along the way. And what we just went, reached out and started asking some of the CIOs, "Hey, would you be willing to do something fun with us like this?" And of course, some of them said, "Yeah, that's probably not our cup of tea." But we had a lot of them say, "Sure, we're in." And I was overwhelmed at how game these CIOs were and how hilarious they were. They were so much fun. And so since that, we've done this a couple of times, and actually we're editing something right now, another series, continuing that discussion, that type of discussion.
You not only had to overcome kind of the internal hurdles that you mentioned, but then also, you know, I think even for filming a, you know, direct to the camera kind of customer testimonial, everyone's still kind of concerned of, oh, let's not ask our customers to do something. You know, it's always risky there. You not only ask them to do something, but to potentially, you know, like you said, the Daily Show factor of, you know, am I going to get laughed at or something?
That's right. And one thing I've learned, now we're doing these, we're doing this a lot more where we did something with the Weather Channel where we were meeting with a CIO and interviewing him or her, but in their location and letting people get a better experience of what their environment's like. We did one not too long ago with a company called Goldcorp. It's a gold mine up in far north Quebec. And, you know, they were a little apprehensive at first about doing anything humorous. And, you know, any kind of environment where you have two scheduled dynamite explosions each day, you know, there's a need for ground rules. I get that.
Right.
So, but what we did, and this is the easy thing that anybody can do, is we sat down with them. We understood what their story was and some of the bragging points that they had, you know, on the big successes, on how they're using technology and a leadership, you know, as a leader in the business, how they're using it to transform their business. I mean, some amazing things that they have done. And we sat down and did a straight up interview, and we got all that on tape first. And then they were comfortable. I mean, they knew that we knew their business. They knew that we've already captured the serious side of the impact they've had on leadership in the business. And so they got that and they felt comfortable with it. And then they relaxed a bit because we had a little bit of rapport just built over a couple hours in the morning. And we had a lot more room to walk around and then kind of joke here and there. And it was all improvised, which, you know, as an improviser, you know that it's when it happens that way, it just feels very real. It feels very connected to the conversation. So it's not like you're trying to force in a joke that doesn't fit. So it's a simple formula where you can go out and get you can go to an improv theater and maybe meet some of the improvisers there and hire a host. Say, "Look, will you come do this interview for us?" And just, you know, keep it clean and don't offend anybody. Just give a couple of ground rules there and you're fine.
You know, there's something to be said too for one of your steps in there of kind of shooting the straight version of it first. I mean, I think about some of the video stuff that I've been a part of that has been improvisational, and it seems like that does a lot of things. I mean, it gives you, you know, kind of a safety, an option if you've got nothing else, but more often than not, it warms everybody up and lets them know that you're not gonna, you know, they trust you a little bit more, and you do have some freedom after that.
That's exactly right. They see, first of all, they're comfortable that, okay, we got our story out. We got our, you know, our key points, our talking points out. And then you've established that you're credible, that you've put the time in and you understand their business and you're asking intelligent questions. And that sounds so much, I mean, you're at a point then to say, okay, can we now loosen up a bit? And what we always tell them that the videos where we've brought in a little bit of levity and a little bit of creativity, those are the ones that we get, you know, sometimes those will get viewed 100 times more than just a straightforward video. And most businesses, of course, they're all for trying to get in front of a large audience. So they understand that benefit for sure.
Well, it's interesting, too. You talk about the impact that you can have, the ability to stand out, which everybody is looking for increasingly, and all of these obstacles. Is there something that you've found to creating a culture that embraces corporate comedy?
Oh, man. embrace. That's kind of tough.
I was going to say that was a real corporate-y, culture-y way of saying that, that would embrace the comedy.
Yeah. synergy. We found synergy. Exactly. I think as long as you say synergy when you're pitching the comedy idea, everybody says, everybody will start nodding. Yeah, this makes sense. What we've done, you know, I one thing that I'm talking a lot about now more is the rules of improv. Like, you're also a student of Del Close, and you've sent me a couple of wonderful books that I actually didn't know about from Close, Del Close,
yeah, yeah,
who's really the father of the Herald and the long form improv format. And some of those rules that Del Close was largely responsible for coming up with many of them, I think those apply. You can take those. I mean, those work. You can get a troupe of 7-8 people and get up on stage with absolutely nothing, take one suggestion from an audience, and play with that idea right then on stage, and then build a little 30-minute show right then in 9 different scenes, you know, 9 little mini acts. So why not take those rules and bring those into the corporate world in some of these meetings, when you have these meetings to brainstorm, that kind of thing. One of the most important ones for improv is there are no mistakes, only gifts. And when you get up on stage, I imagine you believe this as well, that when you've gotten up on stage to improvise, if you really believe, it doesn't matter. I cannot make a mistake. If I use the wrong name, that's not a mistake. That just is a new direction for us to go, right? Now we've discovered that the scientist has just called his patient, or the doctor's called his patient by Shelley when we knew it was, Larry. Well, you've discovered something new about the doctor, right? Maybe he has amnesia. And so that takes you to something new. It's not a mistake. But it really frees you from not stopping yourself, and not your inner critic shutting down ideas. So I think some of those rules from the improv community will help create that culture. I mean, that takes a lot of work, and you're still going to, I mean, you got to do it over and over again. I mean, you can also do it in one meeting, of course. It can transform one meeting, and that's a starting point. But there will always be some people who are just fearful, for sure. And, you know, I've found in that experience, you know what, comedy's not going to work here. If I'm a committee and there's somebody on here that has a lot of influence and they're going to be fearful about what could go wrong, and they voice their opinion several times, then I don't push against that. I'm just saying, okay, let's do the talking head and get that done. Give them what they asked for. And you usually they'll see, yeah, this didn't maybe work out as well as some of the comedies did.
Yeah, I've been amazed lately, it seems, how much improv has been cropping up in, and specifically those teachings too, in business books. Daniel Pink's To Sell Is Human has pretty much a whole chapter. You know, he kind of did some embedded journalism there, and went through an improv class. And yeah, I've actually, the school where I teach at here at the University of Iowa has been toying with getting some of those ideas into a class, and I'd love to do that. It would mean I would probably have to go back to a class myself.
To an improv class?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's interesting. It certainly helps to go back and just kind of tune up those skills, for sure. Well, you know, but you probably find, I know you find that when you speak at conferences or corporate events, I know you probably still rest on your improv skills quite a bit. Yeah. You can count on those in helping you in those moments.
Well, yeah. I mean, it kind of, you know, that kind of training makes you feel like If it's standing up in front of people, that's not a fear I have. Because I know, you know, when you fly without a script or a plan, and can make something happen, you kind of get that that muscle built. And I do lean on those, but I just think in like kind of the blocking and tackling of creating scenes, I'm probably a little rusty. So do you? Well, it's interesting though, because you speak as well, and obviously are doing this at work. But do you find a need to go and, you know, just improvise somewhere?
Yeah, it does. Yes, it. I tell you, it does. Being on stage in an improv theater, there's nothing else like it. There is nothing else like it, and it is fun to improvise with a live audience, like at a conference, for sure. But there's nothing like working with a troupe of people who are performed to be totally supportive, who totally got your back, who are wonderful at listening, and have also got rid of the inner critic and are just ready to play. Man, there is nothing like that. I remember I was with a troupe a few years back at some of the guys who founded UCB left and started a group called the Magnet Theater. And I was in class with some people, and then we formed a troupe, and we were in the Del Close Marathon, the Improv Festival. And I felt like I was running around with these people, and I felt like I was in middle school again. It was like I should not be having this much fun as an adult. It's just amazing what a joy it is to free up that way, you know. And I think there are very few incubators even that have that kind of freedom and joy that you get from working with an improv troupe. And that's why, and I know you do this too. I always encourage people to go take an improv class. It won't come after your first class. You need to get through about four or five classes and then stay with it and start performing for a while. And then you're going to discover something amazing. But even in the first class, you'll discover something amazing. But I totally think it's critical to keep playing on the stage.
In thinking about all of this, I think you kind of alluded to this earlier with kind of the pushback you sometimes get on, you know, if we can be funny. And it's kind of a tough question. I'm not sure if it's one that can be answered, but are there brands that can't or shouldn't be funny?
Yeah, I do think there are. I do think there are some brands that probably should avoid humor. And there are definitely some times as well in, there's some periods in kind of a brand's life where it's probably not a good idea to be funny. Like the first thing that pops to mind is this is years ago, but the BP, the British Petroleum, the oil spill. There's an example where, they probably need to stay away from humor for a while. Not that they did that before.
It's not the Laugh Riot momentum. That
shut it down. They had a long
history. The Comedy Express.
Yes, the Comedy Express. That's what they were known as. Few people know the work they did with Monty Python in the early days at the gas stations.
Yeah,
which is not true, by the way. But there are definitely, I think, periods in a brand's life. But I there's some, like, you know, I'm starting to see now more financial services starting to explore improv and do it well, humor in their advertising and marketing. Where before people thought, well, we can't do this, but there are some cases, I think, when people, if your audience or your customers feel, okay, there's a very serious matter that you all need to deal with, or if there's been a faux pas, then I definitely think humor probably needs to be set aside for a while. But here's the flip side of it, Nick, is that the thing is, if you use humor, it's one of the most humanizing approaches. It's one of the most, it humanizes the brand like nothing else. It's a powerful way to show empathy. And the best humor, of course, so much of comedy comes from pain. And I think the best comedy in the corporate world is starting with a pain point, one of your customers' pain points that you can solve. But exploring, okay, what would happen to this if this pain point went unchecked? You know, and just add, you know, it's, you get into a hyperbole and just keep heightening the idea. and look at what the consequences could be if it went on to like an absurd level. And once you do that, not only do you make your customer laugh, but you've created empathy because they understand, hey, this brand understands my pain. They get that. So, and I think what it does is if there is a, you gain some really strong connection and rapport and brand equity with them. And then if there is a misstep or a problem or an issue in the down the road, people are still going to remember that, okay, there are actual humans like me working there in the call center, you know, or at the company. So that's why I think it is. It's even for any brand, I think there's a lot of room to at least try to find a way to bring comedy into the mix.
Well, yeah, it seems like there's kind of that natural progression of, you know, consumer brands, and then you've kind of got some of the traditionally more reserved B2B financial services. But I think, like you said, you do start to see that experimentation, and especially in those places where it is a little more barren when it comes to comedy, empathy, and so forth. I think it's powerful. And what you said about time, too, it makes me think of that Clorox tweet from earlier in the year when they introduced the new emojis, you know, with different ethnicities, and they kind of got into some hot water there. And their immediate response was kind of jokey, like it had an emoji of like some wine glasses and a bathtub. And I think their thinking was, see, those are the things you usually use bleach for, ha ha ha. And it was not crisis management. Also, not the best time for comedy. Maybe. I don't know.
That's right. That's exactly right. It is not a time for comedy and crisis management for sure. The other thing is with comedy, you have to be over the top careful. You got to really be careful to make sure nobody can misinterpret that you are that the comedy is coming from you poking fun at a group or an individual. So, I mean, if there is some room for like there are some people who are fair game, you know, who play a role of villain. Like right now, Donald Trump, for example.
That's exactly okay, what I was thinking.
You're pretty safe to go. to go after. I mean, if I was a brand, I'd stay away from politics. You want to stay away from politics. You want to stay away from religion. And then, of course, you just want to make sure that there's no you're not singling out any particular group or individual. And, you know, so doing the emoji thing, that's where you're representing different ethnicities. That's not a good idea. You know, you want to stay away from that. But that's the thing. People will latch onto a story like that with Clorox, and they'll say, "Yeah, we can't do comedy because it doesn't work." And it's, no, they made a mistake.
Yeah, we tried it once. We did it that one time.
Right. That's right. We tried it once. We offended. The largest continent on the world.
Yeah.
In the world, and so yeah, let's not do it again. No,
it was comedy.
You got to do it. Just yes, exactly. Blame it on comedy. No, somebody made a knucklehead decision. You mentioned the consumer side, and I think people feel, okay, if I can, you know, I'm trying to convince somebody to make a $2 buying decision. Well, there's not a whole bunch, you know, that goes into that decision process, right? It's not like a 2-year decision making process to figure out whether you're going to go buy a Twix candy bar. So if you earn a laugh from someone, you may convince them to go buy a candy bar. Now, if you're selling an ERP system or, you know, a CRM, whatever, right? That is a 18-month sales cycle. And you just think, well, this a committee's making the decision. So comedy really doesn't fit in here. But again, I think that's another mistake because the committee is made up of, it's made up of people. And you know, it just seems like, why not try to humanize your brand and connect with them in a right way and get them to remember something if it's done well, you know, with humor.
So if there are 2 to 3 things that people should consider, if they want to start, I was going to say embracing comedy, but I'm reminded of my last very stuffy question there. But if there's 2 to 3 things that people could be doing, what would they be?
One would be to, and I actually embrace is not, I just like the word. It's not a jargon at all. Let's be clear. I don't want there to be bad blood between you and me. We've gotten past that after years of counseling. And now we're talking to each other again. And so let's just kind of like to leave that behind us.
It is. You're right.
Let's do that. Let's move forward here. All right. So I think the first thing is to kind of expand the virtual team and, start investigating and looking for some accessible comedy writers and producers and even actors. You know, go to an improv show. That's easy to do. And you can find improv theaters wherever you are. But just make sure, don't go into one where maybe there's not the best talent there and say, okay, that didn't work. You just find out what is the best house team there and go make sure you're seeing people who are really gifted at that. And go check them out and maybe play around, you know, and see if you can find a project to bring them in. So expand the team would be one. The other thing is, two, I'd say, is just explore ideas on the pain point that for the customer that you solve. Start there. Just identify what are the key 1, 2, 3 pain points that our customers struggle with. And just play with those ideas. Just kind of write down on a piece of paper what would happen if those, if that got just worse and worse. You know, if these things were amplified to the degree of something absurd. What would happen? And just see what comes up with those ideas. See where those take you. So those would be the top two things. I think the third thing is going back to improv principles is to support mistakes and risk taking in the organization. And a very simple thing you can do is have one of the top executives when somebody makes a mistake and they fail. But they did try a well-thought-out creative idea. Give them credit. Give them kudos and make a big deal out of it. Give it visibility and say, okay, hey, this one didn't work for us, but what a great idea. And it was thought out and they put a lot of work in it. But you know what? They're not all going to go our way. But start rewarding and recognizing people who are willing to take risk, go outside the lines and maybe fail every now and then and recognize them when they do fail, when it is a mistake. And that'll get people comfortable with not just trying humor, but just being more creative.
Well, I mean, that's such a great lesson too, because what everyone's trying to do, whether it's through comedy or other means, is to stand out in terms of your brand and your message. And it's going to involve mistakes and risk taking. And I think, too often it gets shut down too early. And to get back to the stuffy culture thing, I think that's where it kind of calcifies and makes an inflexible system that you can't kind of swing for those fences.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that, particularly in large corporations, unfortunately, there is a lot of that calcification, and it's tough to do. And so if I can add a fourth point, people who work in an environment like that, well, separate yourself from the brand and start your own blog if you don't have it already. Start your own YouTube channel and just experiment on your own and keep it completely separate from the brand, but make it what you want it to be and write about the things that frustrate you, because again, that's where comedy comes from, pain. I think once you start talking about what really irritates you, what your pet peeves are, it's always if you have a spouse or a partner, you will typically find some really strong pain points there. And there, the thing is, once you start talking about that, you get passionate about it and all pretense strips away and you start to find your voice. And so you can do that on a blog post. You can do that in social media, on Facebook, that kind of thing. You can even do it privately and not post it. You can post it and just keep it private. But start building your chops, even if you can't associate with your brand right away.
So, speaking of brands, what's a brand that's made you smile recently?
There is one that comes to mind is, and it's not recent. I got to go back a ways, but there's a Sears commercial.
The original Sears Roebuck catalog.
The very first catalog. I'll never forget in 1947 when
Old
I was
man
thumbing
Sears.
Through that. That's right. And in Danny Roebuck, who was my college roommate.
Is that true?
No. But there's a Sears. I'm not quite that old.
I was.
I'm not quite that old, but there's a Sears commercial that called The Beach. Go to YouTube and look up Sears The Beach. I'm not going to give it away, but man, it's this kind of rich visual commercial that you think really is not connected to the brand at all. But I tell you what, I first time I saw it, I was in the gym on a treadmill, and I saw it from way across the room, and it was so powerful that from a distance I almost fell off the treadmill. I mean, it just watching it. So I saw that online again the other day, and I just that's just so wonderful. So I love the fact that to me, it's a total gift to the customer. They're to the audience. It's a gift. They do mention their products at the end, but it's such an absurd approach. It's just a nice gift, I think, to anybody who watches it.
And of course, the final question, which episode of The West Wing do you think is most applicable to marketers and brand builders today?
You know, Nick, I get that question every day. I'm glad you brought that up. And few people know that the four P's were actually invented by Mrs. Lanningham. And, you know, what a powerful statement that, you know, for a woman of her position. That's a good question. Let me think about that one. I know what you're thinking. It's the two cathedrals, or what was the cathedral one?
It's the two cathedrals. I get to cite the post hoc ergo propter hoc after it, therefore because of it, most often in a business setting.
Oh, that's good. I cite that most often in business settings that I'm kicked out of.
Yeah.
So let me just put that on the table. It's a very powerful very valid question. Insightful.
By valid, you mean it's not valid at all.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
That's what I thought valid meant.
You might as well just said synergy, and it would have meant as much.
I'm doing the synergy hand thing, though. My fingers are interlocked. That's the universal symbol for corporate synergy.
That's right. That's right, as coined by Jack Donaghy, I believe, of NBC. Yes.
Yeah. Also your college roommate.
That's right. We shared a room with Donnie Roebuck, so we were suite mates and got our mattresses half off.
Tim Washer, where can folks go to learn more about you?
I got a website. It's just my name, Tim Washer, and that would be a good place to start, I would say.
And the news that we may be breaking right here on the podcast is that you will once again be joining us in Iowa for the Social Brand Forum.
That's right. We're not breaking it, though. The Times had it this morning in the late edition.
Damn it. Well, yeah. You try to embargo things, and the big boys just don't.
They don't. They think they have. It's arrogance.
They have their own clock.
Yes, they do.
But if it needs to be in the New York Times, I guess that's fine. It was supposed to wait for this podcast. But
what are you going to do?
I don't know. You can't get caught up thinking about it. So.
You got to let that go. I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be a blast. That's going to be a good time.
Awesome. Well, you can learn more about that at socialbrandforum.com. Tim Washer of timwasher.com. Thank you for joining us on Brand.
Hey, Nick, it's always a blast. I appreciate the invite.
Awesome. And before we go, flip the microphone around to our listeners. Big shout out to Sean Carpenter, who loved our recent episode with Scott Stratton. Sean, thanks for listening. And reminder, if you like something on this episode or another, give us a holler over on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast. You can find links to everything we talked about, timwasher.com, Sears the Beach ad, and everything in between over at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating or review, help others find the show. Don't forget that this podcast is brought to you by the industry-leading Social Brand Forum. Save $100 by using promo code ONBRAND when you register now at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.